Next time you're in a store that sells cigarettes, take note of the advertising. Size, shape, color, all that. If you're not at all interested in cigarettes, you probably don't even notice. But if you do smoke or consider it, the advertising may have an effect. The tobacco industry certainly wants it to. A recent report from the state of Oregon shows the tobacco biz spending something like $100 million in a year on marketing in the state. Details like that come from the report called Assessing Oregon's Retail Environment, Shining Light on Tobacco Industry Tactics. Two guests join us to talk about the report, what it shows, and what it implies. Dr. Tom Jean is the Deputy State Health Officer at the Oregon Health Authority. Tom, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And we also have with us Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, who's the Public Health Officer in Douglas County. Thank you for joining us, Bob.
Thank you.
Tom, let's start with you. Is this report one of a series or the first of its kind?
Yes, we have done reports like this before. This is a new methodology for us, so it's really we're kind of excited about the results from this report.
So, what is different in the methodology? What did you look for, and how did you look for it?
Well, you know, we conducted some earlier assessments in 2013 to 2015, but in this 2018 assessment, we really worked with county health departments, community volunteers, tribes and others around the state to cover nearly 2,000 tobacco retailers across every county. So that included grocery stores, convenience stores, gas stations, and other places. So this is really a statewide effort, and we think it's important because it sheds light on the tobacco industry's marketing and advertising tactics here in Oregon.
Did that figure come in as a surprise? And first of all, how did you assess the $100 million figure?
Well, the $100 million is a lot of money, of course, and that's just for Oregon. It's important to understand the tobacco industry really has deep pockets, and they're spending, I believe, over $8 billion, almost $9 billion nationally to promote their products.
Okay, so
and
a lot
I'll
of money.
And I'll also add that that's about 11 times, the $100 million they spend in Oregon is about 11 times what we're able to spend to kind of educate and prevent tobacco use.
You completely anticipated my next question. How much less does the state spend? And 11 times less is the answer.
Exactly.
Wow. And so we got the marketing number now. So give us some idea of how many people smoke in Oregon, Tom, and how the current rates compare to previous years.
Well, our current rate of smoking is about 17%. But when you factor all types of tobacco, including the concerning trends with e-cigarettes, more than 25% of Oregon adults are currently using tobacco.
Okay, and then we're talking just the smoking kind, or does this include smokeless as well?
That includes smokeless tobacco as well as e-cigarettes.
Okay, so let's talk about e-cigarettes, because any idea how much money is being spent on those by consumers and to market them by the tobacco companies? Well, it's not just tobacco companies. I guess Juul doesn't necessarily fall in that range.
Unfortunately, we don't have information specific to the e-cigarette and products like Juul, that marketing money separate from combustible tobacco. That's certainly something we'd like to focus on for our next report. But if you look around you, you'll see Juul and Blu advertised all over the place. So it's certainly become a significant part of the marketing.
And Bob Dannenhofer, let's bring you in from Douglas County, because we want to get a little perspective here. Rural areas do tend to have higher smoking rates. Is that true of Douglas County?
That is indeed true.
Mm-hmm. How much higher than the statewide average, for example?
So our rates have typically been above 20% using combustible products and then another 5 or 10% that are using the e-cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. And how fast does that e-cigarette portion seem to grow?
Well, the e-cigarette portion has just exploded. Over the last few years, it has risen about 50% per year, so that while e-cigarettes were not really much in the market in 2010, they now, we think, among teens, have the majority of the market.
Do e-cigarettes make you feel, Bob, like you're coming back to square one, like you have to start all over on smoking cessation efforts?
Well, it's a totally different ballgame. The e-cigarettes are problematic in that they are frequently marketed in good-tasting flavors. So teens are taking this. They lack some of the side effects of smoking cigarettes. So there are some kids who tried smoking cigarettes and just so disliked the taste and the smoke that they didn't try it again. Yet with the Juul and the other products like that, there's really not very much to dislike about them, and the kids are getting addicted and addicted quickly. As well, the pods contain a tremendous amount of nicotine, so that one pod has about the same amount of nicotine as a whole pack of cigarettes. And some kids going through several pods a day, that is the equivalent of several packs of cigarettes a day, that's truly worrisome.
Wow, that is a lot of nicotine. You were saying something about the combustible versus non-combustible. Now, there were clampdowns on the flavored tobaccos for the combustible products, Tom Jean, weren't there?
Yeah, in terms of flavors, federally it's restricted now, so there's no flavors allowed for combustible cigarettes except for menthol. Unfortunately, for e-cigarettes, there are currently no restrictions, and products like Little Cigars or Cigarillos, there aren't any real restrictions on the flavoring. So one of the main findings of our report, in fact, was that tobacco and sweet, fruit, and candy flavors is prominently marketed, and that's really a concern for youth who are, for whom that's a real appeal.
It does seem like there was some terminology changing, too. I noticed when there was a ruling about getting some of those flavors off the market in combustible products, like clove cigarettes. Clove cigarettes disappeared, and within a few weeks, clove cigars showed up in pretty much the same packages.
Yeah, it's kind of like squeezing a balloon. You focus on one thing, and then something else pops up because the tobacco industry is really trying to maintain their profits at all costs.
We are talking about tobacco marketing in the state of Oregon with Dr. Tom Jean at the Oregon Health Authority. He's the deputy state health officer, and with Bob Dannenhofer at Douglas County. He's the public health officer there. You can join the doctors on the exchange as we talk about assessing Oregon's retail environment, shining light on tobacco industry tactics, the recent report covering all the year 2018. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So the state, Bob Dannenhofer, has plenty of programs. Any programs, local programs in Douglas County, to augment what the state has for smoking cessation?
Yes, we work with our partners at the state for local programs, and the local programs are to educate retailers about the way they market their cigarettes. We know that the marketing that is occurring at these convenience stores and gas stations is not to hook the 40-year-old. There are almost no 40-year-olds who take up smoking. This is almost all to attract young smokers, and that is as young as 10. So in my pediatric practice, when I talk to 18-year-olds about smoking, some of them unfortunately are smoking, and when I ask when they started, they typically tell me when they were 10, 11, or 12. So it's a very early group. They're very impressionable, and that's why we think the marketing in these convenience stores and gas stations is so negative.
10, 11, or 12, I mean, are those the outliers, or is that getting more common over time?
Sadly, that seems to be the most common time. And in fact, when we talk to older smokers, when we talk to people in their 50s and 60s who are now suffering from the side effects of smoking, and we ask them when they started, it frequently is 10, 11, or 12. So this is a very young, very impressionable group, and that's why we're so concerned about these sweet flavors, this very visually attractive marketing that they've done in convenience stores and grocery stores.
What are the biggest barriers, I think, to bringing the smoking rates down, other than the advertising?
So the biggest rate is the biggest thing we can do is stop the start of new smokers. So really, it's the crop of new smokers that's hard. It's really hard to quit, as people who started smoking know. So really, what we want to do is we want to stop the smokers from starting. And we know that by making tobacco products harder to obtain, by making them more expensive through a tobacco tax, by being sure that retailers sell only to people who are allowed to buy them, and by prohibiting secondary sales, that is, somebody going in and buying a pack of cigarettes for a kid waiting out the door. Those are all the things that we can do to restrict the sales, and we hope then to restrict the use by young kids.
So, Tom Jean, the state has raised the tobacco age to 21, and has that made some difference, and did it show up in this report? That was at the beginning of 2018, right?
Yeah, we began enforcing the new tobacco purchase age of 21 in January 2018, and we did evaluate the law's effect on youth tobacco use, and we found that the law was really showing promise as a way to reduce nicotine addiction for future generations. We found specifically that people aged 18 to 20 in the valuation reported that it was harder to get tobacco products after that law passed.
So are we concerned mostly about point-of-sale advertising? Is that where most of it happens, Tom? I think what I'm hearing is that as kids walk into stores, they have these you know, bright colors and great flavors and all that stuff. Are they getting the messages anyplace besides point-of-sale?
Well, I think social media has been one of the ways that the e-cigarettes and the Juul has been spreading. But, you know, one of the highlights of our report was that tobacco ads are front and center in most tobacco retailers in Oregon. And, in fact, many are next to candy and toys. So there were restrictions in the 70s and I think, again, the 90s on tobacco advertising. So that's why you don't see tobacco on TV. So the tobacco industry really shifted their advertising to the store. So, you know, from outside these stores, there are large signs often on the way in. On the windows, there are signs. You walk in, and there are displays in many places, like I said, often right next to candy or toys, bright colors. And then behind the counter, there are often these large power walls or just big displays that can be really triggering because everybody has to go to the counter to buy anything. And so that's triggering for both youth and for people who have quit or who are trying to quit.
We're discussing Oregon's Tobacco Retail Assessment Report, which finds, among other things, that the tobacco industry spends about $100 million a year in Oregon on marketing. This is based on 2018 figures. Dr. Tom Jean is the Deputy State Health Officer for the Oregon Health Authority. Dr. Bob Dannenhofer is the Public Health Officer for Douglas County. Join us on the exchange. Got thoughts on the way that tobacco marketing is handled, or do you feel the other way, that people should just leave you alone if you're a smoker? We've had that opinion, too. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The industry, as the report shows, does some subsidizing of the selling of tobacco products cheaply, Tom?
Yeah, that's right. The industry provides incentives so that retailers offer discounts and coupons. And we saw that tactic across retailers around the state. 64% of tobacco retailers had a discount on at least one tobacco product. And then, you know, single-serving products are another concern because they're often sold for $1 or less, so they're attractive to youth. And that includes those small-flavored cigars and cigarillos.
Mm-hmm. And the report tells us some aggressive marketing tactics on e-cigarettes. What did you find there?
We heard that from various retailers that the industry, including e-cigarettes representatives, can be quite aggressive and really pressure the store owners and employees to be selling and discounting and advertising, even if they don't want to.
All right, so a lot of information getting lobbed at people in the stores. I mean, you're putting a lot of work into, as you pointed out, though, spending 11 times less money than the tobacco industry is spending to get smoking cessation messages out in Oregon. But can they be in the places at the point of sale where the bombardment tends to happen for the people you don't want to buy smoking products?
Well, I think it'd be difficult to have anti-smoking messages in these places to the degree that the industry is promoting their products. But we're working hard to educate people and to provide support for those who are trying to quit. And I would just say that for anyone who wants to quit tobacco, you can call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. You can also check our website, smokefreeoregon.com.
There's also quitnow.net/Oregon, isn't there?
Yes, that should work too.
Got that as well. All right. So where do you direct the messages then, Tom? Where do you spend most of your advertising budget?
Well, we're the state health agency, so we work closely in partnership with local communities. We're not trying to tell local communities what they can do. So we work with county health departments and other community partners to support these efforts to prevent youth from being exposed to so much advertising, and to get the message that e-cigarettes, for example, are have risks. They have the risk of dependence, just like combustible cigarettes and tobacco products.
Bob Dannenhofer, do you feel like you're swimming upstream against this tide, though, in trying to get people to stay away from the e-cigarettes at this point in history?
Well, public health is always swimming upstream, so this feels quite at home. So this amount, I'm not at all frustrated. I think the recent declines in smoking have been great. I think the worry is the increase in e-cigarettes, maybe starting a new generation of people who are addicted to nicotine who at some point may cross over from e-cigarettes to combustible cigarettes.
So 2,000 retailers, as we pointed out, visited in the process of compiling the report. Were there any interesting stories that you noticed that came out of retailers in Douglas County specifically?
Our experience in Douglas County was very similar to the rest of the state, suggesting that this is a coordinated strategy by the tobacco companies. What we did notice is that if you crouch down to the level of a kid, you saw that the advertising was right in your eyes. So at my 5'11", most of the advertising is beneath me, but at the 5 foot or so that most 10, 11, or 12-year-olds were at, this advertising was right in their eyesight. I don't think that was by chance.
Interesting. So, yeah, look at it with different eyes, and you might see things a bit differently. We had mentioned a couple things that you'd mentioned taxes, Bob Dannenhofer, and we talked about the age of 21. Any other measures, Tom Jean, that you would recommend in the report for trying to get people to improve the odds of people not starting smoking in the first place?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
We're working with our local Blue Zones group to work with retailers to make them aware of their responsibility for not getting young people started. And I think we've had some cooperation with them to cut back on the advertising, cut back especially on the sales of the single unit things that really, I think, attract young people to start. So we've had some pretty good experience with our local retailers.
Now, Tom Jean, like you said, though, it sounds a bit like squeezing a balloon where you clamp it down in one place and it pops up in the other.
Yes, but there are evidence-based solutions that are effective in reducing tobacco industry marketing and really, you know, protecting kids and helping people quit. And one of those is requiring tobacco retailers to buy a license. Oregon is one of only 9 states that does not require a license to sell tobacco products. California does, and of course, 41 other states do. So tobacco retail licenses are really a way to hold retailers accountable, for example, when they make illegal sales to people under age 21. And it also creates opportunities for other prevention approaches, like limiting the number of tobacco retailers near schools or the availability of flavored products. And we do have some counties and cities in Oregon that have been taking action on this. So we have Multnomah County, and then in the south of the state, Klamath County, they both have tobacco retail license policies in place. There are several other counties that are considering this, but unfortunately we don't have statewide requirements right now. So that would be one big step. Another thing, just to get on the price thing, we know from abundant evidence research that when tobacco is more expensive, youth are less likely to use it. It's not just about a tax, though that would certainly help. It's about prohibiting the distribution and use of those coupons, those buy one, get one free offers, putting in place a tobacco minimum price standard, and then requiring a minimum pack size that might restrict those sales of little cigars.
Let me understand, though, with the no licensing thing in Oregon, is there any other kind of certification short of licensing required to be able to sell tobacco products?
To my knowledge, I think if you're a gas station, convenience store, or any of those places, there's nothing you need to do beyond your normal business requirements to be able to sell tobacco. There's no license.
All right, we'll take a couple of minutes talking about this report, Assessing Oregon's Retail Environment, Shining Light on Tobacco Industry Tactics, one of which, as the report from the state points out, is that Big Tobacco spends $100 million in Oregon for marketing every year. Questions, comments, thoughts about this? Join us on the exchange, 800-838-3760 by phone. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. We have an email here from Heidi in Medford who wonders, do e-cigarettes have the same destructive effect on teeth as the old kind had? If so, she says, dentists could be helping out in discouraging teens while they're getting braces and such. We can still tell people who smoke by looking at their yellow teeth, says Heidi in Medford. Bob Dannenhofer, what do you notice about teeth and e-cigs?
So the yellowing of the teeth from cigarettes came from some of the tar that was in cigarettes, and we don't think there is as much tar in the electronic cigarettes. But the trouble is that these e-cigarettes are so very new, less than 10 years in wide use, and we have no idea what the long-term effects are going to be. We know that vaping is an incredibly effective way to get chemicals into your lungs, and that's why you can get nicotine into your lungs so well. But there are many other chemicals that are in these vaping products, and we worry that these vaping products are getting into teens at a time when their lungs are still being formed, and we are very worried about the long-term effects of this. We do know that inhaling other kinds of vapors, you may have heard of popcorn lung, which is what happens from inhaling the vapors in the popcorn factories, can cause really severe damage. This wasn't known until many years after. So we really worry about vaping and the long-term concerns that we don't know what's going to happen with long-term vaping.
How did the products get to market so fast, clearly ahead of the regulatory regime, Tom?
Well, I think that's just it. I think, you know, like any new type of product, there were no regulations in place at the time, and it wasn't until recently that the FDA officially deemed e-cigarettes tobacco products. So even though they contain nicotine that is almost in almost every case derived from the tobacco leaf, they weren't originally considered tobacco products, and so it wasn't until then that we got a little more regulation on the e-cigarettes.
We've talked about tobacco taxes just a bit. There is a proposal to raise the cigarette tax another $2 a pack. That'll be on the ballot for voters to decide in November of 2020. To your knowledge, Tom, Gina, is any of that money earmarked for smoking cessation, or is it all Oregon Health Plan?
I think both are involved, but yes, it's certainly going to be funding part of Oregon Health Plan. I would also add that $2 increase would put Oregon on par with both California and Washington, but we'd still be below. So it's not actually, it's just kind of bringing us up to the regional standard.
Well, $2 to pack more would just get us up to where the other ones are. A couple seconds left here, Bob Dannenhofer. You find that people are susceptible to smoking messages between 10 and 12 years old when some have told you they started. Are they also susceptible to anti-smoking messages at that age?
We hope so, although I think the data is that the pressures to start smoking are far greater than the pressures we can give to not smoke. You know, teenagers do not have a long future focus. They don't see the long-term damage from this. They see the thrill and the taste of starting early.
All right. So a lot of stuff to take in the report. It's available online. It's called Assessing Oregon's Retail Environment, Shining Light on Tobacco Industry Tactics. Dr. Tom Jean is the Deputy State Health Officer for the Oregon Health Authority. Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, Public Health Officer for Douglas County. Thank you both for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange today.
Thank you.
Thank you.